Hello, everyone. This is Mike Quinsey, Connecting the Light. My guest today is Charles Green. He has a new book out called ET Yoga 2012 and Beyond. And he tells us that it contains cutting-edge concepts and ideas regarding developing higher consciousness. And it is a combination of the teachings of yogic masters connected to that of extraterrestrials from the Andromedan, Sirian, Pleiadian, and Esosani civilizations. And he tells us the information is self-empowering and crosses the line whereby self-healing, healing others, and energy transference can be achieved. And practical techniques regarding reality creation that can relate to the challenges of 2012 and beyond are detailed. So welcome to the program, Charles.
Well, thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be part of your program.
Well, you're very welcome. Just of late, I've had quite a few people who connect their books or their interests with 2012, and it's understandable because we're rapidly heading towards the end of it. Now, tell our listeners about your first experiences in higher spiritual consciousness, which I think goes way back to 1969. Tell us a bit about your early days, in other words.
Okay, my early days were back in the old times, I guess, for some of us, was Ram Dass days, and also the spiritual teachers Paramahansa Yogananda and also Sri Swami Satchidananda. And then about 1969, my first big wake-up call was spending about 4 days being my higher self. And after that, it's been a self-search or a quest for enlightenment since. And primarily my early teachings through the late 60s, 70s, into the 80s was primarily with a yogic background. And then from that point, I enhanced those teachings by studying and having experiences with extraterrestrial information, and basically have put that information together with a certain amount of discernment to come up with the latest sort of ideas that I focus on, which I believe are quite self-empowering and on the cutting edge in terms of information, specifically centering around the whole concept of belief and belief systems.
Right. So are you doing that with ascension in mind, bearing in mind, in fact, that it is expected to take place by the end of the year?
Yes, I am bearing the ascension process in mind, although I guess everybody's take on that is slightly different. I think that, this is certainly a critical year in terms of humanity's growth in consciousness, and I anticipate I anticipate a turning point with respect to the energy on the planet being more slightly positive than in the past, it being more focused on negative. But I see the ascension process is taking a bit longer than, just the end of this year.
Oh, yes. Yes, I'm sure what we're looking forward to is a key point in the whole process. And yes, you're quite correct. It's not the end. It's actually the beginning.
Is that how
you see it? Hello, Charles.
My the focus sort of information lately that I think would be of most interest to your readers and listeners would be around the idea that thought and emotion creates. And connected with that is the latest scientific theories that are coming out, especially in quantum physics, and a lot of the teachings from Greg Braden, who's one of my kind of favorite modern-day scientists. And the conclusions that they're coming up with are that the holographic universe basically functions as a computer in terms of they make simulations and whatever, and they basically identified certain characteristics of how this holographic universe functions, and it operates on the idea of consciousness and the language of recognition is belief. And if you concise those ideas into one term, you basically come down with what you believe is. And the closest approximation to that would be the concept in the medical field of the placebo effect, where certain people are cured from certain issues of, or disease issues from pills that basically objectively don't have any inherent healing power, but because of belief only, they're cured. And so if you kind of take that concept and expand it to any area of your life, that's more along the lines that the science is showing, that your belief in any area creates an outer experience. And this is one of the fundamental concepts that I talk about in my book, ET Yoga 2012 and Beyond, The True Nature of Reality, because it basically focuses on the ideas that your thoughts, your beliefs, your intentions, and your emotions actually create the outer experience that you have. And that once you take 100% responsibility for creating your outer experience, it's a point of power, because if you're the person that created the outer experience, then you also have the power to make adjustments and change that outer experience. So those, the concepts that I'm sort of enhancing my yoga training with, also coincide with what's being found to be true in modern science.
Right. So as individuals, then, we can create our own future. But what about the collective consciousness? Would that not create a very powerful timeline on the strongest beliefs?
In my opinion, yes, because I believe that the way that we take responsibility for our own personal experience, that collectively or globally, we also create that outer experience through our beliefs. And unfortunately, I think there's too many people that tend to be focused on going negative. And I think the direction to go is to create a new positive. It's sort of like if you love peace, you don't create peace by hating war. You create peace by loving peace. Or as Mother Teresa once said, I didn't want to attend an anti-war rally, but I'd love to attend a peace rally. And from my information that I'm learning is that when you go against negative energy, basically you just get entangled in that energy, and it only serves to perpetuate that which you are against. For example, if you're against these wars against terrorism or wars against cancer or wars against drugs, all these wars in one sense tend to perpetuate the energy that the people that are against those concepts tend, they perpetuate the energy they think that they're against, but they just help reinforce it. Much like in the old Russian days, the Bolshevik Revolution, they took over from one energy and replaced it with the same one eventually later. So I'm sort of very into a positive focus and thrust on a global level to create the positives that we want to see. And specifically in reference to this year, 2012, I think it's our expectations and the positive nature of the positive spin that we can put on 2012 that can create a positive experience. That's one of the second big ideas that's in sort of ET information, is that outer circumstances don't come with built-in meanings, that we place an emotional spin on an outer circumstance, and that is what eventually determines our experience of it. So we have the power to accept that, just like going to somebody's house for dinner, one person might think it's wonderful, another might be allergic. The same exact experience can be have many ramifications. And into my way of thinking, the formula is positive experience in and a positive experience, positive emotion in, and positive experience is the result. And if you place a negative spin or negative emotional spin on an outer circumstance, then a negative will be the experience. So in this light, there's a certain amount of choice in reference to the kind of world that we do create for ourselves, and we do so, I think, both collectively and individually based on the same principles.
Yes, and I believe you have a resonance with Rupert Sheldrake, who explains his theory of morphogenic field resonance, the 100th monkey effect. I wonder if you'd like to explain how that works.
Well, yeah, I'd love to, because I think those are two, that's a great question. Basically, what they've really found now in science, which also collaborates extraterrestrial information, that your state of being is more powerful than the outer circumstance. And this is because they've located now what's called the neural network in the heart, or sometimes called the brain, which emits an emotional, it emits emotion, but it's a frequency that's 5,000 times stronger than the brain and the head. So, and it's this emotional energy that interfaces with the morphogenetic fields and creates our version of reality. And I've been talking about this for about 15 years now, but the first time I've ever seen it actually demonstrated and proven. And I actually would ask people to check this out, is that on YouTube, at the it's called Greg Braden, B-R-A-D-E-N, Greg Braden Healing Cancer. And basically in this about a 10-minute video, he takes us to a hospital in Beijing, China, where there are three practitioners who are working on a woman who went there from North America with a three-inch diameter tumor. And inside of 3 minutes, they made this tumor disappear. And the way it was done is by them reaching some coherent heart emotion that was based on the concept of the woman already having been healed, and this energy then resonating with the morphogenetic field or universal intelligence field. And the shadow effect is the disappearance of the tumor. And to North American thinking, for the most part, that's termed a miracle. But as Greg Braden points out in the video, and it basically shows that once people have done this a number of times, it's not really a miracle. It becomes a technology. But it demonstrates the concept of the morphogenetic field and how our emotions interplay with it and how it is involved with creating reality. And, of course, the 100th monkey effect, to me, was quite a fascinating concept because, for those that aren't familiar with the concept, I think it started with teaching some monkeys how to wash potatoes, and there came a point where monkeys on a different island at one point in the process actually picked up the concept. And it's sort of also true in the human field. And the most obvious analogy that I can think of related to that would be what's called the children of AIDS. There's apparently in California some years back a story about a young child who was diagnosed with AIDS at birth and at 2 years old and then at four, and then all of a sudden at 5 or 6 age he did not have AIDS anymore. And they wondered what was so special about this particular child. And what they found out was that he had 4 codons of his DNA activated that the normal person in mainstream society did not have. And then they also tested him against other types of diseases, and what they found was he was virtually immune to disease. Their further research indicated that they found other children like this as well, and that in point of fact, as we speak, there is a sort of a 100th monkey effect happening in our society with respect to this concept.
Now, I did in fact see the video you refer to, and it was very compelling. Do I recall correctly that there were people present who were doing some form of chanting? So would you also say that the frequency of the sound had some effect?
Are you speaking in reference to the Beijing experiment?
Yes, I am, yes.
Yes, they were doing some chanting. They were chanting a word that basically in their language basically meant already been healed. And there's certain, I guess it all is a... It's sort of an integrated whole. I think the whole process needs to be seen sort of in, I think all the components are important. In fact, one of the important components was that the woman that was, that had the cancer that was being healed also believes in this process. And one of the things that I say on my website is that, you know, this site, you know, basically recognizes the value that everybody's beliefs are equally valid. And that if you believe in mainstream medical, then I guess maybe that's where you're going to put your faith and your trust. But for many of us, especially in the spiritual line of work, what we're realizing is there's a correlation between the progression of consciousness and the ability to heal ourselves and to heal others through similar processes as this. And even though that they may be ridiculed by mainstream science, doesn't negate from the fact that, in point of fact, many people are learning self-healing processes and this energy transfer that can be very, very effective. And for those who believe in that sort of philosophy, it's very powerful.
Hello?
Yes, hello?
Oh, what happened then? You disappeared for a second.
Okay, I'm back. Everything's good.
Okay, carry on then. We're still here.
Yeah, well, I was just saying that for those who like to be involved with, in self-empowerment, I think there's a point at which you reach a point with your own self-empowerment that you realize that this also can affect the disease issues because, again, there are frequencies and emotions that that we deal with. And, again, relating to extraterrestrial information, in their point of view, or at least in some civilization's point of view, the whole concept of disease relates to emotional dysfunctional issues. And when you learn to do your own homework on your own emotional state, and you start seeing the connections between that and health and how health is reflected in your and also dealing with taking responsibility for your outer health as well as your well-being and your happiness, that these are they're kind of new concepts for society. But in point of fact, the more and more people are beginning to tune in to the amazing power of the human body to heal itself and also the amazing effects that emotion and our own self-empowerment can have on health.
Right. Now, you do talk about creating a positive experience and also shifting to another version of reality. How is that used for the purposes of positive healing, for example?
Well, the connection for me is, to explain what I would call the process of like reality creation, would be that the first fundamental phase of reality creation comes from our initial beliefs, definitions, emotions, and expectations, and many of these ideas and beliefs we download basically from our initial caregivers. So during the first 6 or 7 years of life, we download a lot of information, and these become our fundamental core beliefs. Now, in time, as we mature into adults, we start to thank our parents or our initial caregivers for a lot of the wonderful ideas that they've taught us, but at the same time, we may have picked up some ideas that don't serve us any longer. So to me, this initial base of belief, and if you want to know what you believe, look and see what's happening in your outer world. It's not there to punish you. It's there to show you what you actually do believe. Mm-hmm. And the second level of reality creation, and when I used to do the ET Yoga show on BBS Radio, I used to challenge my listening audience, and I challenge this listening audience, to this technique. And the technique is that if you view something as being negative, try placing a positive emotional spin on it, and what you'll find is that the outcome will be a positive experience. Now, certain experiences will take longer before this becomes apparent, but if you actually log this down on a piece of paper and you actually get the idea of it, what you'll find is it'll just totally amaze you because it actually works. So the second level of reality creation is actually placing positive emotional spin on an outer circumstance, and thus it does shift you to an experience that's more in line with your preference. And, of course, the third level of that would be very expanded and from a very high level would be called instantaneous manifestation, or what in the healing area would be like sort of Greg Braden video demonstrates that it's more closely approximates instantaneous results. And of course, depending on the person's ability in healing or self-healing, the level would be anywhere, you know, on a scale from 0 to 100, anywhere from 0 to 100.
Right. Now, you mentioned there about putting a positive spin on something. Give us an example of something we might do that you could consider to be negative, and then how you would create the positive spin.
Okay, let's say that you're a typical person that you're always on time, and you need to catch a train to make your way to work. And you show up for the train, you think you're on time, but you just see the train pulling away, and you've missed it. So a quite normal reaction to that would be to blame the train company for leaving early and being upset and angry and basically throwing a negative spin on the situation. And I might point out here, because I think this is an important factor, is that people need to realize when they are emitting emotions that are reflective of blame, criticism, and justifying their circumstances, these are reflections of victimhood mentality. And as soon as the word blaming somebody else comes out of your mouth, initially you're creating yourself as a victim. Now, a positive spin on that, I'm saying every situation would be different and every experience would be different, but I'm just going to make one up. Let's say I'm aware of this concept about positive spin, and all of a sudden this situation happened, the train's leaving. Maybe instead of being, you know, blaming and being negative and throwing a negative spin on it, maybe I'll throw a positive spin on it and say, you know, I can't see any possible good that can come from this. I missed the train, I'm late for work, but, you know, I'm going to put as much positive energy into this as possible, and I just can't wait to see what the possible outcome might be. So you might then just, you know, sit down on a bench, and all of a sudden you see another train pull up, and somebody gets off the train. It's an old friend you haven't seen in 20 years, and if you hadn't been late for that train, you wouldn't have made the connection with this person.
Yeah.
So that would be an example of taking, instead of putting a negative spin on the scenario, you put a positive. All of a sudden, you are having now a positive experience on that situation.
Yes, I can see the point in that. It must be very difficult, though, to avoid not feeling critical when you're placed in a situation that possibly isn't directly your own fault.
Well, you know, looking at that, I think back to, for those who are old enough to remember, back in the 70s somewhere, there used to be a concept going around that nobody could make you lose your peace, that you were responsible for your peace, and that if something in the outer world was happening, that it was your responsibility to keep your peace and not to get lost in anger. And although it's certainly more easily said than done, I think this is kind of the same basic idea, but on a little higher concept. In other words, when you start tuning into the fact that you can actually have make a difference in the world that you're experiencing by placing positive spin. In fact, Bashar, who's from the Asasani civilization, he's an entity who's to Daryl Anka. Basically, he has actually stated that one of the primary responsibilities of the rational mind is to place positive spin on outer circumstances. So although anything like that is certainly takes more effort and more of conscious awareness than if you didn't, and it's certainly easier to blame others and create yourself as a victim, but if you're really focused on trying to be as self-empowered as possible, so you're taking more responsibility. In fact, people that are on BBS radio, like Dolores Cannon, I know has stated that in her view, in connecting this idea to ascension, states that two of the big things that people need to learn about the ascension process is, one, taking 100% responsibility, and number two is letting go of the past. So, you know, again, this whole concept ties into the ascension process because taking responsibility, then ironically, those things which we complain about and blame others for are ironically of our own creation. And on a higher level, Bashar would go so far as to say that when we leave this plane and go on and move on to this plane, or what some people would call death, that when we look back at this world, that world that which you left was actually you. And that this is an interesting concept, because instead of originally where we think that we are a component of the universe of which that, or the dimension of which we were a part of, we ultimately find out that we were that dimension. And it's the holographic nature of the universe that allows each of us to have that experience.
I feel it's going to be very difficult for people to understand the concept that everybody will experience their own reality, because we think of maybe the hundreds of different ideas of how this period of time is going to end at the end of this year. It's very difficult to believe almost that everything can actually happen at the same time. Now, you talk about parallel worlds. Is that the answer to it?
Well, I think it's certainly a factor, because to my way of thinking, there's an infinite number of possible realities, and they're all being played out. And there was even some UFO technology that was apparently discovered. I don't have firsthand knowledge of this, but there are people that say that there was this technology called Looking Glass that was sort of like a discovered UFO technology that gave glimpses of future timelines. And Dan Burrish was one of the people who worked with these technologies, and I don't know, he has an interview at Project Camelot. I listened to that. Basically, he said that he looked through one of these technologies with a negative sort of point of view around 2012, and he saw a negative scenario. And similarly, if you had a positive expectation, you might find a positive scenario. I think that this is the choice that that people on the planet have now, that there are so many people that are in fear of the whole concept of 2012. And in my way of thinking, there are basically two choices, that you can have a love vibration and a love expectation on this year 2012, or you can view it from a negative point of view. And either way, you're right, and in point of fact, it'll be the reality experience that you'll create. And with respect to this whole concept of reality, although we have, let's say, we have the idea of a consensus experience or a consensus reality, to my way of thinking and to most ET extraterrestrial ways of thinking, there is no such thing as an objective reality. Reality is the experience. And if you connect to that, the fact that what you believe is what you create, it's your emotions and your thoughts and your expectations that create your reality, then you can see that any situation, including 2012, it can be a catastrophic possibility, or it can be the most beautiful and wonderful experience ever. And in my point of view, that this is the approach and the attitude to take, that this, that today is the most beautiful day ever, and this year is going to be the most wonderful year ever, because I think it entertains possibilities for a leap in consciousness for mankind that hasn't been available to us for millennia.
Yes, indeed. I agree with what you said there. So what you're saying really is that everything exists all at once, all in the now, and yet we have the illusion of separation.
Exactly.
So,
and one of the things
how can we get by this feeling of separation?
Well, I think it's a pretty big question, but I think the a specific experiment that I saw done was definitely a way that you can start to think about this connection. And it involves actually the concept of an extraterrestrial concept called prime radiant. And I think it's particularly appropriate during a week when there's been some scientific publicity, at least, about what's been loosely called the God particle. But according to the Esasani teachings, the entire universe that's physical is actually one wave or particle that travels at infinite speed, so it's no laws of physics. It has infinite mass, travels at infinite speed, and when the energy crosses itself, it creates dimensions and also contains certain geometrical patterns. And the easiest way for a layman to conceive of this concept would be to imagine a large circular bulb that is lit up, and let's call that the one particle or one particle wave. Mm-hmm. And then let's imagine another bulb, let's say 3 feet to the right of it, and imagine it as being not lit up. And then we light up the second bulb, which makes it appear that the energy now has moved from the first bulb to the second. And now we're going to imagine the bulb is going from the second back to the first. If you move that energy back and forth between those two bulbs fast enough, just like moving your finger fast enough between two objects, it will eventually appear as if the light is on in both places at once. It will appear as if the energy is everywhere at once. And this is the analogy to the energy of creation, that this energy of creation, in point of fact, is everywhere at once. It appears to be all places at once, but as an actuality, one particle traveling at infinite speed. In connection with that idea is the extraterrestrial concept that there are only two real objective facts in this 3D dimension. And those facts are that this world was created with unconditional love, and second, that we have consciousness. I might also refer our listening audience to a site on the internet. It's called the College of Christ Consciousness. And at the College of Christ Consciousness, on the first page are listed 21 points that are the result of channeled information that is supposed to be from Mother Mary to a woman named Celia Fenn, or I know, Jean Hatch, actually. And that information is basically the rules of engagement at the 3D level. And this information was kept for a couple thousand years in mystery schools and became available a few years ago and placed on the internet. And I've had many people actually go to that site and look at some of those rules of 3D, and what people will find is that they're all based on the same information of belief and energy and thought creates. In fact, a few years ago, I did a radio show, and what I did was I took this information from the College of Christ Consciousness from 2,000 years ago, and I related it to current information from Pleiadian sources, and then also connected and cross-referenced that with Bashar, who says he comes from 2,700 years in our future. So spanning a 4,700-year time frame, it so turns out that all that information is totally consistent with each other. So I think it's a good body of knowledge if somebody's looking to sort of create a concept of a unity consciousness.
Yes, right. So you've been talking about dimensional awareness. Where would our higher self fit into all this?
From my experience, the higher self exists just outside the time-space continuum. And in point of fact, that's who we are. We actually are spiritual beings having a human incarnation, and at some point in time, the higher self splits a portion of itself off to have what we would call a human experience. And that higher self operates in, like I said, outside our time-space continuum, but just outside of it.
Right. Excuse me. Had to have a little cough there. Right. So we are heading towards a very important time in our evolution. Why is it that there are other forces that are trying to disconnect us from the fourth and fifth dimensional awareness?
Well, in my opinion, there are certain factors on this planet that are not in our best interest, do not wish us to be successful either in the ascension process or in anything to do with self-empowerment, because of the it being threatening to their control of humanity. And clearly, self-empowered beings and people who are raising their consciousness and their light quotient are going to be a lot less to control and manipulate.
Right. Now, you have mentioned that you figured out that in some of your previous lifetimes, you spent some time in or off Earth. Is that correct?
I don't believe I've talked anywhere about my own personal experiences and other lifetimes.
Oh, right, okay.
Mm-hmm.
So what you've acquired, which you relate as extraterrestrial channeling, that actually comes from other people such as Bashar, then?
Some of it is personal experience, and some of it is actually having some discernment for many sources that are out there. Of course, there's lots of extraterrestrial information. There's lots of what I would consider not accurate information or purposeful disinformation. What I sort of, in my own personal experience, of course, there are fabulous systems of teachings that I've never been familiar with, but of the ones that I'm familiar with, I sort of use as a baseline as the classic yogic text is actually a book called Autobiography of a Yogi, and that's by Paramahansa Yogananda. Yogananda basically was centered in California and passed on in the 1950s. And Sri Swami Satchidananda also has a book out called Integral Yoga. And it's a combination of six different yogas, and he passed on about in the year 2002. And in the extraterrestrial area, the book that I would consider for most people that look back on it as sort of the classic ET book, similar to the yoga classic, would be a book that was written by Barbara Marciniak called Bringers of the Dawn. And I think that book probably came out, and I'm not certain of the date on that, but somewhere probably in the early 1980s.
Hmm. Yes, I can remember it was all the rage at the time, and I couldn't tell you very much what was in it anymore. Yes, but I do remember that. That was very popular, and no doubt still is. I think you related that to Bashar's book, didn't you, Blueprint for Change?
Blueprint for Change, I think, is a fabulous book, and it's not, Bashar doesn't have many books out, but he has lots of information on YouTube, and his site is www.bashar.org. But I think Blueprint for Change is includes some amazing concepts. You see, to me, in studying this field of what I consider really valid extraterrestrial information, it kind of goes back, the earliest I can find of some of these concepts, like that thought creates, or that you are responsible for creating your own reality, or that you can place positive spin on outer circumstances, or that outer circumstances are less important than your actual state of being. These concepts really are new to humanity. Like, and the earliest I can trace back is maybe the Seth material, maybe the Ra material, Law of Miracles, back in the early 70s. The public sort of gets the public version of this in the popular CD that's kind of been passed around over the last years called The Secret. Some of the ideas in The Secret, I think they originally came from some of this body of energy, some of the Abraham Hicks information, and the Seth material, a lot of that, in my opinion, Marilyn the Magician, a lot of this stuff came from Bashar and Bashar's teachings. And it's just my own personal opinion that because I'm on the lookout constantly for amazing new sources of information, that right now I don't know of a better source of information than Bashar. When I was told that I was going to be a guest on your show, you brought up a new avenue for me to sort of delve into with Helio Arkanophis and the High Priestess of the Sun, and I started looking into some of the basic concepts there associated. What I found, and I might share that with you, was that unconditional love, the concept of balance, moving beyond jealousy and revenge, judgment and blame, into new consciousness of self-responsibility for self and others, and empowerment, unconditional love, acknowledging the divinity, and that exists within each unique individual soul. So when I saw that as sort of like a synthesis of information around this, this would be something that would ring my bell for something that I, you know, would want to find out further information about. And similarly, I have a kind of a nose for, areas that are related to, you know, those concepts. And frankly, listing all those concepts, even in our conversation tonight, we've talked about, we haven't talked about judgment yet, but we talked about blame, we talked about new consciousness, we talked about self-responsibility, we talk about self-empowerment, unconditional love, and the uniqueness of each individual soul. So, you know, we've covered a lot of those points even in tonight's show.
Yeah. Now, I think there's a fair amount of evidence to show that ETs have visited the Earth for a number of different reasons. Do you think that before the end of the year we will have had first contact?
Just my own opinion. I've heard so many predictions about the future, and to my way of thinking, we're sort of creating this game as we're going along now, and I don't know anybody that's all that accurate making predictions. My general feeling is that by the end of this year, there'll be an established fact that we are being visited by extraterrestrials. As far as a first contact scenario, I'm more along the lines of Bashar, thinking that until 2012 is over, actually, Earth has been under quarantine since we've been under quarantine from extraterrestrial contact until 2012, or 2012 is over. So it doesn't mean they're going to land on everybody's front lawn the next day or the end of the year. But it does mean that the door is open for humanity to sort of we're on the verge of first contact. That's my opinion, and we're at the verge. And the more closely we approximate their frequency, the more that people are wanting that and intending that. To me, it would accelerate the process. In fact, actually, I worked on a committee that was actually set up through Daryl Anka and Bashar. And it was called the Extraterrestrial Open Contact Act. And I was actually the chairperson on that committee. And basically what we devised was rules of engagement with respect to a first contact scenario and wanting to make that into actually public law. Because to our way of thinking, and there actually has been some contact in previous history, and that contact, some of it leaks out, but it hasn't been made public. And one of the goals of that particular law is to make future contact open and public. And so to my way of thinking, that whole issue is kind of interesting. I don't even try to convince people that there's such a thing as extraterrestrials, because I think the point at the moment is the amazing, amazing information that's already been passed on to us from extraterrestrial sources through a lot of what I would call valid channelers. And I think there's a certain, what do you want to call it, inaccuracy in channeling. I think probably everybody's maybe 5% out. I know Bashar has even recommended a book called Cosmic, which he says is about 95% accurate, and that's a very high percentage for a channeling. And that this whole subject of extraterrestrials, what we're going to find out is, in the long run, that we're not orphans on this planet, that we have an extraterrestrial heritage, and that in very short order, we're probably going to become aware of that extraterrestrial heritage, as well as some of the amazing information that we can make practical right here and right now.
Yes, I certainly agree with you there. Now, I think I'm quoting you correctly here. You talk about approaching null time. Can you explain what that is?
Well, I'm not an expert on null time, but from my perspective, there's an infinite number of parallel realities going on, or timelines, as a lot of people like to refer it to. I think there's probably about 6 or 12 major timelines, and I think each of us is going to be drawn to the timeline that our higher selves need us to experience. We're all going to end up in the right place. Like, there's nothing to worry about. I think the main idea is to try and keep your peace, keep your focus, not be lost in fear, not be lost in anger. This is not a year to be depressed. This is not a year to lose yourself in anger. This is a year to keep your peace and expand your light quotient. However, with respect to null time, it's a possible scenario along one of the timelines, and that scenario would involve creation of a null time, which would result from the rotation of the Earth stopping and creating, and then eventually spinning in the opposite direction, probably involving some sort of at least magnetic pole shift, and resulting in a type of situation where we have about a three-day period where energy could be leaving and coming from this planet. The most, in a practical sense, the most logical analogy I could give to explain that concept would be, to my understanding, there is, if people can think of what I would call a tetrahedron, or a two intersecting pyramids that rotate in opposite directions around each other, actually exists around every physical object on the planet, and there's even a tetrahedron that surrounds the entire planet. And when these tetrahedrons rotate balanced in and rotate in opposite directions and rotate in a balanced way and rotate at the speed of light, that which is inside those tetrahedrons actually moves up to the next dimension. In physical properties, that would be somewhat analogous to what's called a superconductor. And in fact, in the 1980s, a guy named David Hudson invented or reinvented the concept of monoatomics, which are electrons which actually have characteristics of superconductivity and do fluctuate between dimensions. So this, the whole concept, I guess, of null time would be one possible scenario where there's a timeline where, in point of fact, a certain portion of the population could be involved in the ascension process. It can also be a portion or a timeline where there's actually Earth ascension as well. So it's a possibility on one timeline, and I think there are like multiple timelines that are out there, and I think that it's our vibrational frequency and our expectations and our consciousness that will determine the type and timeline that we experience.
Hmm. Right, it's very interesting hearing about all these different prospects. Anyway, the point about that is, I suppose, then null time doesn't mean no time.
No, not at all.
It means a particular phase, does it, in our process of ascension?
Yeah, it could be a process in the ascension process. From what I understand, actually, all the dimensions are moving up one level. And if you actually think about it, you know, a lot of people dismiss that or they're in denial, but if you go to your science books and look at your science book back when you were a kid and look at your science book now, I'm going to guess it probably says that the frequency of the Earth is 7.83 hertz. But if you do a little searching on the net, what you're going to find, although you're not going to find it in mainstream news, what you're going to find is the frequency of the Earth right now is somewhat over 12. So the Earth's changing. It's changing its frequency, and we're in the process of an ascension process. Now, how all the specifics of that are going to work out, I certainly don't know. But I'm certainly aware that things are changing.
So are you saying that with the change of frequency, will come a change of dimension?
I believe so. Yes, I think that when we hit about 14, we're going to be in another dimension.
Mm-hmm. Right. So in the course of all this, having mentioned the higher self, I'm sure a lot of people wonder how they can link with their higher self, and indeed, how would they know that they're doing it?
That's a great question. From personal experience, I can only relate to my own experience on this planet, and one of the ways that I initially made contact with my higher self was doing a technique that came from a great yoga master named Sri Ramana Maharshi. And he used to teach a technique called the Vichara to his most high disciples. And basically the technique was to place as much consciousness as you can in the center of your forehead, like approximating where your third eye is, and putting all of your attention there, and then slowly negating and repeating the following process. One is that I'm not my body. Second focus is I'm not my inner organs. Third focus is that I'm not my thought processes. The next process is I'm not this spot, and the next focus is what spot? That particular technique if done properly and with full focus, can result in an experience of you and your higher self. Now, other ways that people can increase their connection with their higher self is through the vehicle of imagination, because imagination is a direct line with higher self. And in a very practical term, another way to be in alignment with your higher self is, one thing is certain, is your higher self, anything that's fear-based or that puts you in fear is not in alignment with your higher self. Those feelings such as unconditional love, gratitude, compassion, joy, these are emotions that are in alignment with your higher self. And in addition to that, when you're doing your passion in this world and you're excited, excitement is like a compass that tells you you're doing what your higher self would like you to do. So when you're in your passion, when you're in your excitement, and when you are intending to connect with your higher self, you're creating connections. And the stronger the connections, the more in harmony with that you will be. In fact, some extraterrestrial information indicates that, in point of fact, we never have a creative thought come from the higher self, that the rational mind is not capable of creative thought. The creative thinking comes from the higher self. The brain in the head is the receiver of the information, and the rational mind is the perceiver, as in past tense, of experience. So this whole concept of connecting with higher self can be done in a variety of ways. Ultimately, the goal of self-realization or enlightenment would be a oneness with our higher self.
Yes. Well, thank you for that explanation. Now, your work is to help people empower themselves. Does that also include the healing of self?
Yeah, it does, actually, because my main website at www.etyoga.com is actually called Healing the Known and the Unknown. I call it a one-stop shop for self-empowerment and healing. Because I find that the self-empowering information crosses over to healing. And I'd like people to know that, you know, you don't have to give all your power away to the medical establishment, that you can, in point of fact, learn much about the body and healing and be involved in some amazing processes that I think are going to be at the forefront of a new age. In fact, there have been even some scientific studies that equate to the fact that when you can emit the emotions of unconditional love, compassion, gratitude, these are actually antidotes to disease, and that disease is actually a low frequency. I've also been told that we were intended to have a 12-stranded DNA and be more Christ-like in our original creation, but in point of fact, we've been limited more to a 2-stranded DNA through manipulation from extraterrestrials of not such a positive nature, and that once we're operating at connecting 6 strands of DNA, that disease does not exist at that level. Nor do I believe disease would exist in the next dimension, because the frequencies are too high, and the frequency of disease is more equated with lower emotions, especially those related to fear.
Yes, I agree with you on that. So we can look forward to what I think you have described as a huge leap in evolution, and we can basically get there by having the right type of beliefs, and if it's humanly possible, try to express ourselves in unconditional love. Would that be a reasonable sort of summation of it?
Yeah, I think that's very accurate.
Fine. Now, we're not far short, believe it or not, of the end of the program. Is there any aspect of your book that I haven't touched upon that you would like to mention?
Well, you know, I'm very gratified that you've asked them really amazing questions, and I think in my own mind we touched upon a lot of the major components of the book. I think that if there's something that I can pass on to the listening audience is that, you know, each of us is on our own spiritual journey. And certainly we're all learning as we go along. I've tried to make ET Yoga 2012 and beyond. The true nature of reality is a sharing of information that I've had. And at my blog site, which is really kind of a different blog because I have about 72 articles on my website that are basically for free. There's also some free downloads at my website. But the main thing is if you want to kind of take your time to analyze a lot of the information that I put out, you can go to the www.etyoga.com and you can hit on the blog button and you can, you know, skip other people's comments. Sometimes there's five people comment on an article, sometimes thousands. I've had over a million hits on that blog site, but you can also search engine topics of interest, and I wish everybody my highest wishes very sincerely for their attainment of full consciousness, perfect health, and abundance.
That's very nice of you. I think just on reflection, there's only one area that perhaps I didn't mention that I would have liked to. So you perhaps can comment on that very briefly. How do people get out of the way of becoming victims or believing that they are held in victimhood?
Well, I think on a practical level, the main idea is to try and catch yourself when you're involved with blaming others, being critical of others, or justifying your circumstances. Those are the three general areas that relate to a victimhood consciousness. And if you can avoid that and you take taking more responsibility, you know, ironically, that which you create, you create it. So there is nobody to blame or criticize. And if you can take responsibility, it's a big leap in awareness. But that's a big one. And to me, one of the things that people tend not to do is to take responsibility. They're busy blaming other people for their failures or blaming other people for their conditions. And this is coming from a not conducive to creating a positive type of experience that they really desire.
Yes, I guess, again, it must be difficult for people who have really experienced some problems which are directly the fault of someone else, not to feel that they're being victimized. But that must be a difficult one to get over. Is there anything else people can do? I mean, do you have to just simply forgive the person who's done you some harm and then, I think you used the expression about letting go?
Well, there's probably a point in that. I think with anything that happens, it's not to justify somebody who's done something to you to justify what they've done to you. But I think there is a point where you need to deal with those situations and move on. And I find too many people end up living in the past and going back over things that it just creates emotional baggage for them. And I think that once you get out of those situations and gain a little bit better perspective, you can appreciate that you may have a belief that helped to create the scenario. And if you can identify those beliefs, that's a. And if you can't, I think just the sheer intention of creating a new positive situation and a focus on the positive is always the way to go. I mean, there's always people that would like to focus on the glass half empty as opposed to half full. And my advice to people is keep as positive as humanly possible. You can only do the best you can, but the best you can is probably going to be good enough.
Right, yes, indeed. Right, a final question. Does God figure in your own beliefs and teachings?
I'm sorry, I couldn't quite hear you on that.
Yes, I'm asking you if in your own beliefs, does God figure in your teachings?
Yeah, there's a word in there that I'm having a hard time hearing. In my own beliefs, there's something that is in my own teachings. I couldn't quite hear the one word.
God.
I don't know if it's our connection or if I'm losing a connection or can you spell the word that I can't hear?
Okay. I'm speaking of the Supreme God.
Okay. And what's my idea about that?
Does the Supreme Being have a place in your teachings?
Well, certainly, because to me that's the energy that's that created the universe with unconditional love. And this energy, I think, you know, I talked to someone recently who was trying to prove the existence of God. Well, to me, the proof is that we, despite our beliefs, and we can make believe that we're not unconditionally loved, but the fact is we are unconditionally loved, and the proof of it is that we are supported 100% in our beliefs. So God even allows us to have that belief that we're not. But in ultimately, we're going to find out that whatever label you want to use to define the infinite, whether you want to call it cosmic consciousness or all that is, or prime creator or a God or a personal God, whatever concept your mind uses to define the infinite, because it's not definable, that energy is what you most in your heart want to be aligned with.
Thank you. That's a very good round up there. And I must thank you very much for coming on to the program. It's been very interesting talking to you. And I'm
well,
sure
thank you very much, and I found you a most gracious host, and you asked great questions, and I would just like to thank you for having me on the program, and as I said, I wish the best of in all of life's future for our listeners.
Thank you very much, Charles. It has been very nice talking to you. Well, friends, as I always say, invariably at the end of these interviews, that was another very interesting one. Next week, I'm hoping to have Robert Schwartz. He's an author who's brought out a new book called Your Soul's Gift. Now, the only reason I can't tell you for certainty at the moment is I'm waiting for a reply from him. But for anybody who's on my subscribers list, you will hear early next week who the guest is. I hope by then to have got it sorted out. So thank you for being with me today, and I hope you can make it next week. God bless you all. Thank you.